going to count down.
What is community radio, and how does it differ from other medias? Over the course of the next hour, we'll examine the movement that is community radio in North America, to understand the contribution community radio is making to the media landscape and the opportunity it offers to potential participants who find these stations on their FM dial. In early September of 2004, the town of Portsmouth, Maine, found a new voice within the FM dial, a community radio station that seeks to give anyone an opportunity to join their efforts to create a community space on the FM dial. CKUT was there to document this moment. As hundreds gathered to help build the studio and equipment to bring the Portsmouth station onto the FM dial, we talked with several participants about their community radio experiences.
12, 3, 2, 1.
You're tuned to WSTA.
Yeah. In Portsmouth, New Hampshire.
Oh, the smell is wonderful. Your nose tells me.
This weekend, I've seen the most energy in a group of people that I've experienced. The dinner last night is an example of that community. I mean, two different crews during the day took time away from the workshops, away from the station itself, to go and prepare food that had all been donated by local farmers. And, you know, by the time dinner came around, not only were there, you know, a plethora of dishes and all kinds of stuff for vegans and vegetarians and omnivores, but there were these massive piles of corn, and it's like somehow that attitude of, you know, the part of it's like a sing-songy teamwork ethic, but it's also just a kind of a byproduct of all these people in the space. I mean, you have to feed people, and when you put that energy together, it just it multiplies.
I think is really, really different from, I see any kind of public radio and commercial radio pretty much the same, because it sees the public only as an audience, and people actually don't think about those two words as being separate, but they're very, very separate, because the public can actually participate in community radio, where it's like you wouldn't even think about that, you know. That's why when people say, oh, the public hears it, and, you know, the audience hears it. But the public doesn't only have to be the audience. It can participate, and that is the thing that is radically different than, you know, commercial radio and any kind of public radio, because they dictate what content you listen to, they dictate what to think, they dictate what news gets to come out, the news of the day, they get to decide programming. You absolutely have no say in it. I mean, you can, you know, give your money in, but you cannot go to a station meeting and go, hey, I really don't like this, and they will actually listen to you. And I start getting involved also more, because I feel like that was the only way that communities come together, because it was I haven't seen a community center like that anywhere, where a community center is really about the community. It's a lot of community center usually just serve one type of community, and the radio station actually acts as a center for all communities, because everyone wants a piece of the air, everyone wants to help, everyone wants to participate. Radio is a very exciting thing, and I think that it actually helps making radio back into a hot medium, so to speak. National Public Radio has made it actually a good job of making it a cool medium, you know, but, you know, remember the times the radio when people were like listening intently. You know, it was a hot medium then, but now television is a hot medium. I feel like community radio has a way it can, you know, reinvoke the hotness of radio.
We talked with Kai Ayutoro, director of Low Power FM for the National Federation of Community Broadcasters in Oakland, California, about how she got involved in community radio.
I got started in radio, community radio, about 15 years ago as a volunteer at KKFI in Kansas City, which is a 100,000-watt radio station that had been on the air for 1 year. Took this station 15 years to get on the air. And once it got on the air, it was on the air. But the unique way that we went on the air was we had a studio in the basement of this guy's house because they didn't have their own studio space. So they hired an operations person who developed the studio in the basement of this house. And our transmitter was probably 10 miles away. And it was housed in a trailer of an 18-wheeler, right? Huge tower. And what we would do is we would go in and produce our show on reel, called Show in a Can. We'd produce it on reel, and we put it in the box. Every week, everybody would produce their shows, and they'd take the boxes out to the transmitter, and a volunteer would be out there on two reel-to-reels and play them back-to-back, 24 hours a day. Unique experience. Okay, you're talking about volunteer hours? Those were volunteer hours. But I didn't have a show when I first started at KKFI. I started as a volunteer that just basically kind of kept things organized, did filing and, you know, typing and filing and typing. And but I did this for the operations director, who was the only paid staff there. And when he left and went to Atlanta to become the general manager for the station there, I was the one who knew what was going on, so they gave me the position. So that was my first paid position at this radio station. And I was the operations public affairs director, because we had an operations music director and a development director and a business manager and I think a general manager at the time. But we worked in a team setting. And so I stayed at KKFI for about 3 years and I did everything. We even moved the station from the house to the third floor of this building, and we had a satellite dish that was on the 12th floor roof of this building. And then we moved to another location, which was in the it was in Westport in Kansas City. Now that's an experience, to move a dish, a huge dish, off of the roof and put it on the second floor roof of another building free. You know, we got somebody to donate a crane and did all that for us. But it was a unique experience getting folks organized and moving the station over there. And I stayed there for 3 years. And then I went to Lincoln University in Jefferson City. I was hired as the program music director there, and I stayed there for a year and a half, which was another great experience because I was in a school setting. So I learned a different form of broadcasting, you know, by a clock, you know, a rotation. You know, I got to see what commercial radio stations or how they run, because, you know, you're basically teaching students in a college how to become managers and DJs, you know, at commercial stations. But it was a great experience. We were non-commercial, though, and we aired all types of programs and news. The greatest experience there was learning how to pull the news down off the satellite and play your music and do your intros and, you know, do the weather. And, I mean, all of this is on a clock that you had to follow and then chart it also. So it was a great experience. And you know how, you learn how to do several things at one time. And I stayed there for a year and a half. And then I went to Atlanta and was the business manager for WRFG in Atlanta. And I was business manager for 4.5 years. And then I became the general manager for that station. And that was an exciting time in my life because, first of all, it was Atlanta. I come from Kansas City, so, and I left from Jefferson City, which was 36,000 people, to Atlanta, a place I've always wanted to move. Worked there for 6.5 years as business manager and general manager, and then got burnt out working with probably 150, 200 volunteers and a board of directors that was board of directors that were kind of, you know, entrenched in station politics and blah, 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 blah. So I left there and went to work for an AIDS organization. And I was the director of finance for the National AIDS Education Services for Minorities, which was a terrible experience. So then I came back to radio. I was like, oh, God, let me get back into radio. And NFCB had a position open, and so I did that. So I'm doing that. Not did it. I'm doing that.
For our listeners, perhaps you can talk about community in community radio. For you, what is the community in community radio?
Well, the community, my community in community radio is the African American community. And it's very important for me that there is a positive image of African Americans because mainstream media does not offer that. I was talking to somebody today about some of the billboards that you see for a certain cell phone that really, to me, is the first time I saw it on television, it was very derogatory. It was just very offensive to me as a black woman because they were portraying older black women lusting after a young black man. And that was just like, duh, you know, why are they even, you know, showing this? And then I see the billboards and it shows how people portray young black men and young Hispanic men or Latino men. And it said, and they were simple words. The way they portrayed the black man was booty call. Selling a cell phone, right? Faces all distorted. The way they were selling it to the Latino community was cheap. You know, these images that are portrayed in our communities to the vast community, you know, says that all young black men want is booty, you know, and young Latinos need cheap stuff. You know, I've never seen an advertisement for that cell phone for anybody white. So the target audience is two certain groups, but then also it's showing or it's portraying those groups in a particular image. And that's what the radio does all the time. Rap has a bad rap because the only thing that you hear on the radio is bad rap. And I don't mean bad as in bad. I'm talking about terrible, messed up rap, okay? It is not... It says that black men or Latino men disrespect women. And it, you know, it's all about profanities. It's all about booty calls. And, you know, that's not what our community is about. So it's very important to me to get positive image programming over the radio so that that young black men and young black women aren't programmed to think that that's all that they talk about, or that's all that they think about, or that's all that they're going to be. And also not to allow young white people, and especially young little white children, to think that, you know, these big black people or men are, you know, all they're after is booty. So, you know, it's those who are in control of the media that portray what people are about or communities are about. So it's very important to me to make sure that there's a positive image of my community, just like it should be for you and anybody else. And we don't have that power in mainstream media.
Can you talk about the other ways in which mainstream media and community media are different? Do you see other differences there?
Well, mainstream is all about the dollar, you know, and not that we shouldn't be about the dollar too, because we still have to pay our bills, you know, as community radio, and that's very important. And we shouldn't have to have leftovers or hand-me-downs. We should have what we need, you know, not something that's left over. But it doesn't mean that we need a $1 million building either, you know. And mainstream radio is all about big bucks. And it's also about streamlining it down to one or two people that are making the big bucks and machinery, you know, and no personality, no culture, no sharing of culture, no sharing of information. It's just like, this is how we see it, and this is what we're going to let you know about whatever we want you to see.
The role of community media is to, it gives us an opportunity for civic and cultural participation. I think the key thing is that it's an interactive place. It's a place that can be integral to the political activities and cultural activities that can amplify them, literally amplify them, in a community. And to me, it's almost a biblical thing, you know, bearing witness to our own experience and to each other's experiences is a powerful healing thing. It's the spirit of community. Community is where people live, and I believe that people really do want to know, you know, want a place where they can call in and say, you know, I've lost my dog, or has anyone seen, you know, my kid, and if you see her, can you send her home, and that kind of thing. And they want to hear the local music, and they want to hear people talking in their own vernacular and their own language. And that, to me, everywhere I go, people are energized by the idea of empowered by the symbolism of when you put a microphone in somebody's hands. It's like saying what you have to say is important and what you're doing is important. It's a kind of validation. And if you believe that communication is a human right and something that is something everybody deserves to have, then we need to find ways of changing these limitations, and finding ways that, whether they're technical solutions or political solutions, that can allow us to really have a voice for everyone. And so that's what we're trying to do, and I think that's the future. And I think that people, that more and more people are getting hip to the fact that communication is a human right, and this is something that we're going to fight for. Can you introduce yourself and how you got involved in community radio?
I'm Hannah Sassaman, and I got involved in community radio by doing a lot of stuff with an independent media center in Philly, in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And it was really a really big eye-opener for me, because I'd been watching the media all my life, and during the Republican National Convention in 2000 especially, was totally aghast at the coverage of some of the different things that were happening. There was a tent city being set up by a group called the Kensington Welfare Rights Union, for example, a Bushville, where they were talking about how the government had been disenfranchising the poor, and how this election and is going to continue, would, at that time, would continue to do so. And there was no coverage of it at all. No coverage of that. And that was such a beautiful and important protest, and such a, like, affirming one, you know? It's not about breaking anything or having a loud argument even with someone. It's about putting something together, which represents a substantial problem, and it got no coverage. And I remember being really angry about that. Just one time among many. So through that, I met a lot of different people who were actually building independent radio stations, and I wanted to work with them. And so eventually, just in a totally non-exciting kind of way, they had a job opening, and I'm like, I should work here, and I applied. And since then, I've been doing a whole lot of different things with Prometheus. Not many of them technical, but many of them about writing and organizing and doing outreach. And it's been really educational and an emotional roller coaster, for sure.
Well, I want to talk a bit about the Prometheus Radio Project and what we've been doing here this weekend, but just in terms of the community radios that you've helped bring about with Prometheus, but also the ones that you've had an opportunity to see in action and the people that you've had to meet, what's your sense of the role of community or the community in community radio?
The community within community radio is it's a family, and it's a family of people that may not have met each other but are completely willing to give to each other whenever the opportunity comes about, because whenever someone learns a skill at something like this, a radio barn raising, where we actually put a station together in a weekend, or when they discover a need, let's say that a new station going on the air in Southwest Florida needs a console, and there's a station in Tampa nearby that might have one, there's this automatic network of support that sort of sustains all of these stations. And it's not only a network of equipment and station hierarchy and infrastructure supplying needs to another station hierarchy and infrastructure. It's also like this really open, kind of warm, questioning and questing spirit that belongs to all of the different people who start to participate in community radio. They want to ask questions, they want to learn about each other, and they want to do similar and complementary work in communities all over the world. Like, I sent out a press release about the fact that we were going to be building this station here this weekend, and I got an email back from Zane Ibrahim, who is a community radio builder in South Africa, outside of Johannesburg. And he's like, can you please tell them that our spirits are there with them? And that's what it is. It's this global sense of solidarity and mutual aid that doesn't really exist in almost any other form of media, let alone form of, like, sort of group or society. It's really unique and special. That's the other thing I didn't mention, really, I guess, about community radio. It's literally built by the community. This station is a great example of it. Their mission is to make sure that everyone who wants a mouthpiece in the community can have it and can use it. Barring, of course, like, swearing for 15 minutes, I guess, at, like, 9 in the morning. But they want to make sure that anyone who has an opportunity to broadcast and who needs to get something out can do so, when commercial radio is the opposite of that. Not only is there a complete barrier to entry to anyone in the community being able to comment on the air, let alone have their own show in most cases, the stations don't even work together to try to accomplish their missions better. They fight each other. They want more ratings. They want better Arbitron ratings, more money, better market share in the 18 to 24-year-old market. Clear Channel looks at its mission as selling the ears of you and I to advertisers. The clients of the big broadcasters are advertisers, and we are the product. They're selling us to them. So it's kind of this insane, divergent world.
Hannah Sassman, one of the coordinators for the Prometheus Radio Project, comments on the mandate of Bush Radio, a community station in South Africa that sees its work as 90% community and 10% radio.
When I hear that, and I've heard that quote before, but it had slipped my mind, what I think about is that when you're coming from the global south and you are talking about building a radio station, it's not just to have in one more alternative media source amongst many, even consolidated sources like you have here, to be able to have more of a choice. for many communities, including the folks at Bush Radio and other folks that Prometheus has known from Guatemala, from Nepal, from Colombia, from Liberia. There's another group in Africa that's been contacting us. It's about having any voice at all and about having desperate, desperate information. And so it centers like Bush Radio that not only serve as a place where information can get out, but also as an organizing space where people can come in and then after they hear a report, they can become part of the project and work to solve the problems that they're hearing about. It's a center for power as well as a center for information. And I think that that is a unique situation. Like when we really have a lot to learn from the community radio projects of places like Bush Radio in terms of what we do here in the U.S., That said, you asked me, do I think it's possible in North America? And I do. I think it's, in fact, becoming more and more necessary because the traditional spaces where North American people have had the right to gather, to communicate, and in our democracies, which are supposed to be, in our democracies, which are supposed to enshrine public space and make sure that the public square is sacrosanct, a place where a debate can happen and decisions can be made without people in power really making too much of an impact, those places are being eroded and replaced with places that are completely owned by corporations, which have a complete and total interest in making sure that the voices that get out benefit their stockholders, benefit their bottom line and their desire to sell the products or do the work that they want to do. And so as those public spaces disappear, we need community radio to become not just a place of diverse information, but also a place of diverse action and organized action. So I hope that we learn from Zane, and I hope that we learn from the new South Korean community radio stations, and that we learn from the projects with like Colombian teenagers and rebels who are fighting the government in Guatemala and people in Venezuela. Like I hope that our models become those models, because they'll then, with the resources we have in the United States, they will ricochet into something that bit greater than we could possibly imagine, that could really result in us changing the way the systems work here.
Can you talk about the story of Prometheus and its role in creating spaces for community radio?
What Prometheus does is takes this idea. There's an idea that if you build a community radio station and make it open to the public for diverse opinions to get across, as well as to get marginalized opinions, those that are not really represented in the commercial radio system, out, that it will change the debate for that whole town, and it will energize the people who both hear it and who make that radio. And so what we have, the reason Prometheus came into existence is because we were all, we knew that there was another media possible and just weren't having it in the city where we lived, in Philadelphia. But we knew that there were other community groups around the country, and we were seeing from their example that there were stations in places like Jeffersonville, New York, where there is like a station that's hydropowered, literally an environmentally conscious station that is able to save resources and through its own example demonstrate that you can do things as technologically advanced without impacting the environment. There were stations like WORT, which in a community with an incredibly diverse population, Hmong community, Native community, young and old community, people with many different perspectives, when you had that station in Madison, it really, really affected the debate. People depended on it to get different news, and they used what they heard on that station when they were going to places like city councils or when they were going to places to try to affect change. And so we wanted that model to be everywhere, and we knew we could do it. And so we started building community radio stations around the United States and also agitating for them and building them all around the world, knowing that by building more stations, we'd be establishing a better example, or these groups would be establishing more of an example, and we would eventually get a critical mass of radio stations where no one would think it was okay to have just media owned by Clear Channel, by Viacom, by the News Corporation, giving them what they needed in order to participate in society, but they would say, no, this is crap. We need a diverse radio system. We need one that we make so we can actually tell the stories that are not being told. And so that's kind of what Prometheus continues to do. We build these stations, and through them, we invigorate the movement toward, for more media democracy, with the stations as examples, with the joy of putting them on the air as motivation, and with the eventual goal of a diverse system that gives everyone a voice, their necessary voice, the voice they have a right to, some play, like an ability to exist.
You talked a bit about the network that exists worldwide that Prometheus has heard from. Can you talk about community radio as a worldwide movement?
Yeah.
Does that exist?
Community radio does exist as a worldwide movement, even though from country to country, the conditions in which it can exist are very, very different, and the needs which it needs to serve are not only localized to the communities, but different for each nation and for each region. And so, as a global movement, the great thing about radio is that it can travel the world very easily. You can take sound, and even if you can't hear it, you can't hear a signal from China in Italy, you can take that sound and put it over other means of communication. And if you have, let's say that you have your own station in Italy, you can broadcast that out to people who don't have computers to hear that encoded sound. And so, again, it's the example of community radio telling these marginalized stories that really makes this huge difference in people being able to really build and enjoy these stations and use them. And so, and it's the critical mass of stations globally, which, and the examples which they set. Like, I was just reading about, there was a journalist who was reporting in Thailand, a woman who had been reporting on how a major corporation there had been flaunting the environmental regulations. And she was slapped with a huge, like, libel, slander suit from that corporation for the work that she had been doing. That was major. That was huge. It is censorship. It's tantamount to major censorship to have a corporation fight back against the free press for talking about what's going on. And so that got out across the United States. People were broadcasting about her and what she'd been doing on their different radio stations. From KGNU in Boulder, Colorado, really broke that story to us here. And now there's like many, many, many letters in support of her going back to Thailand, and a movement to try to make sure that she doesn't have to pay this exorbitant fine and even maybe suffer jail time for just being a free reporter. So that's just one example of how the network, where community radio builders talk to each other and meet with each other across boundaries, can really make a difference. There's an organization called AMARC, A-M-A-R-C. It's the World Association of Community Broadcasters, and that's another place where people can go and meet and not only just exchange technical skills. Like, Pete went to the one in Kathmandu. Pete Tridish, the founder and the tech director of Prometheus, went to Kathmandu this past year to teach radio building and was able to build some transmitters with some Pakistani broadcasters that went back to their stations. But also Prometheus received these invitations to organize in like Kuala Lumpur, in Papua New Guinea, in all of these different cities and towns and countries all over the world, because those places want to be part of this national movement or international movement. They want to we want to work together in order to make everyone richer in information and in resources and in freedom of speech and communication. So,
given this barn raising has been taking place all weekend and is helping to sort of establish a community radio here locally in Portsmouth.
Yeah,
can you offer anything to the community of Portsmouth or perhaps other communities around North America who may or may not have yet an opportunity to go into a community radio station? What would be the contribution? What would be the impact? What would be the opportunity that they would have by walking through a community radio station's door?
The opportunity that any person living all over the world would have in walking through the door of a community radio station would be that they would be participating in the making of the media just by walking through that door. If you walk through the door of almost any commercial station, there are so many barriers to entry. You are pushed back without identification. You are pushed back if you're a person of color. You are pushed back if you're young. You're pushed back if you're poor. You are pushed back if you're not someone wearing a business suit with a briefcase, an assistant, and a merchandising contract for that station. What happens at a community radio station is that the DJs who are on the air want to dialogue with you about your opinions about their shows. They want you to help to support the station itself. Like, they're like, wow, we really need to make a whole bunch more RCA cables, otherwise the sound's just not going to go into the board. You'll start to do that. You'll learn the skill. You'll become an essential part of that station and keeping it on the air. You'll be able to make radio yourself. You might get trained first. You might have to deal with some people you don't like because they might have different opinions than you, but you'll put your opinion across as well, and you'll learn from everyone else's opinion. And you'll be covering news, which is not being heard anywhere else, and the people at the station will be grateful for you educating them, as well as, and you will also be grateful for them educating you. It's like a paradigm shift in how you start to think about media and how you start to think about your own power in changing people's perceptions, but most of all your own. We really need anyone who cares about community radio to join in. It's essential that we get more people. We already have a lot of people, but the critical mass isn't going to come unless you become active. If you're listening to CKUT right now or listening to this over the web, it means that you're interested in this process and in this project, and you can help. You can help by supporting your local station, by going there, by making a donation of food, of support, of money, of time. You can help by finding out about more stations all over the globe. You can, like, be active by telling your friends about the fact that there's alternative media out there and that they'll like it if they consume it. It's not cheap or bad just because it sounds different than the, like, the 26-minute sitcom or the, like, quick cut to commercial or the top 40, like, Casey Kasem hour or whatever. It's different, but it's better. And, it's cool. It's sexy. It's so much. And so please, please, please participate. Please support your local station. You can go to Prometheus' website, and there's tons of ways you can help with what we're trying to do with building more stations with 5 minutes of your free time or your access to resources. So it's something that you can support in a much more active and engaging way than just by making a donation to the Sierra Club or Greenpeace. Instead of paying to support your beliefs, you should actively participate in this way of doing it. It changed my life. I highly encourage you to do it. You'll learn so much.
I think it is vital to a community to have a local station that is a way of bringing people together, is how I see it. I think it's important that the on-air programmers really know who their audience is, really know who's in their community so that they can service everybody, that everybody can feel a part. You can just walk into your station and know that there's a place for you. I think community is the bridge that connects one side to the other. I think a lot of work needs to be done to make it a true community. When you have low-power FM stations, I think that there is more possibility to have more community and more community involvement. But as we are a 50,000-watt station, and there's a lot going on in certain areas, and so it seems to take the community away. It's all ego tripping for a lot of people who are in radio as well. So I say give the power back to the people, the community. And the media doesn't really focus on world structure or globalization and the impacts worldwide. You either hear from a North American standpoint or you hear about it, at a third world standpoint, but never how one connects to the other. And I think community radio is what will bring it full circle. And we see how we are all, I like the saying, we're all Palestinians, And so in that sense that, in a way, cliche, you're as strong as your weakest link. And so if we're all empowered, then that makes for a greater society, social justice, human justice, civil justice for everybody.
Reem Khatua, a community radio participant from Washington, D.C., spoke about the work of community radio in North America.
Hi, I'm Reem Katkhuda. I'm Arab, I'm Muslim, and I came across the waters to this country to make sure that foreign policy in this country changes. That's how I learned that the public is not well informed, and I decided to join media around 94, mm-hmm. actually dragged on by somebody who saw me emceeing events done with Arab Women Artists Collective in New York City. Mm-hmm. She said, you work so hard to get, if you're lucky, 400 people. If you get on the airwaves of WBAI, Pacifica Station in New York, you might be able to touch 200 and some thousand people. Mm.
Can you talk about what community means to you and community radio?
Community means for me a collective of people that realize their commonality. And community radio is a medium that through broadcasting decides to serve them, to celebrate their victories, to document their history, and to also inform them so that they can make responsible, aware, and democratic citizens' decisions. And community radio, it poses the challenge of truth, it poses the challenge of guts, it poses the challenge of being real. Things that we are
hearing
very rarely on other media. It has allowed me to meet a wonderful group of people that are all part of the independent media movement like me. It has allowed me to be able to provide something to the movements that are organizing in this country and across the world for social change in a progressive, radical, empowering, beautiful way. And it has allowed me to celebrate and show that another world is possible at a time where more and more of people across this globe are becoming citizens of a U.S. empire.
Mm-hmm. And you indicated just there that radio has some relationship to social change. Can you talk a bit more about that?
Everything has a relationship to social change. The responsibility of media in a democracy is to inform the citizenry. And unfortunately, at these times, it seems that that very mission has become something revolutionary. Mm-hmm. So community radio has become revolution, and it is being broadcast if the people doing it are really doing their job. It should be the responsibility of anybody in media. Unfortunately, too many media is owned by corporations. The money is the only measure of a profit of something. When people try to streamline so as to increase this monetary profit, oftentimes they are wasting and actually killing a lot of need to be there for survival of Earth, of the human race, and the human spirit. And in that sense, corporations become the oppressor. But again, old ladies, old men, young children who have stocks in these corporations are part of what is making this world and this Earth go towards where it's going. And community radio should take on the responsibility of documenting that, questioning that, speaking truth to power, allowing people to speak truth to power, and putting a mic where no one else is listening and amplifying it. And I also think it should also be a process by which more and more people of the community become the reporters, where the line between the listeners and the audience and the reporters and the makers of radio is blurred and eventually disappeared. Mm.
It sounds like you would agree with Zain Ibrahim from Bush Radio, who says that community radio should be 90% community and 10% radio.
Yeah.
Do you think that's a model that would be effective here in North America, considering Bush Radio is in South Africa?
Yes, but it still should sound good, and that's 100% radio. And what I mean by that is by content, but also by audio. It should still sound good, because after all, you are sneaking into people's bedroom, cars, workplace, and oftentimes at the time where they are strained. So you want to not bombard them, but edge them into this world that you're trying to document, and but sometimes end up just introducing.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk about the direction that you see community radio going in North America, and perhaps the direction that you hope it would be going, if it's two different things?
Well, there are two types of community radio, and now community is in quote. One that claims to be, but in reality is starting to be led by either the Blueprint Project or by special interests or by a different community than the one that it's supposed to serve. And then there is a constituent community-made radio, which is hopefully many of the low-power FM, which is hopefully Pacifica, which is hopefully Canadian public radio, which is radio that tries to free itself from corporate and government influence. And oftentimes to do that, you have to free yourself from their money. I also see that this there's a big grassroots radio movement that is trying to tab into the youth and introduce to the youth this art form, and it's catching on. They're getting bigger and bigger as the years are passing, and that's very refreshing. I also see a lot of independent artists and sound gatherers that are putting their own labels out there, so independent music and production is feeding this community radio. And by the way, I do not see community radio as only being on the airwaves or on the internet, and that's a new thing actually that is happening. A lot of community radio is on the internet, but it's also sometimes something distributed on CDs that people kind of play in their schoolyard, in their neighborhood joint. And these are various ways that I see community radio evolving. The way I'd like it evolving is to include much more of the side spectrum, meaning the very young and the very old, meaning an emphasis on the disenfranchised, people in prison, people who are poorly employed or unemployed, mothers that are very busy with their children, single parents that are struggling so hard. We don't hear enough of these voices, and this would be wonderful to extend and empower and teach or just bring in the expertise so that they can talk.
When you talk about radio, you seem to indicate that there's a not only an element of social change, but a level of empowerment. The contributions, when we often hear about community radio, we talk about what contribution you can make to community radio, but what is the contribution that community radio can make for people? And maybe you can talk about yourself personally, the contribution that community radio has brought to you, the perspective that it's brought to you.
It is like a bunch of stars hanging out in a sky that is polluted. And it is pieces of jewel that remind me why I need to get up and not leave United States of America. It is something that should enhance people's lives by knowledge, by just beauty of sounds or of content, and broaden people's horizon. I see power of community radio is to be not just a window to the world where you sit and you look at, but a door where you can step in and live and do more things.
And for those who have never taken that opportunity, what would you say to them for those who have never walked through that door?
Either find the community radio in your neck of the wood and listen on and participate, or ask for one. And the way to do it is to go to radios that are supposed to serve the public, ask to look at their public log, ask to look at their community issues. And these are two things that they have to provide to you by FCC rules. And these are things, asking them for these things makes them realize that people are questioning it, and hence they need to serve more. Another actually public, not radio, but cable TV, is another realm of possibilities that people need to know that they're entitled to participate in, cable in the United States and in Canada, a public service cable, is supposed to provide training for the community and also airwave space for the community to put on their own shows. And there is nothing more empowering, exhilarating, or fun than to actually participate in making media.
Well, we've been participating this weekend in a barn raising, making the structure, the infrastructure, so people here in Portsmouth can make media. What do you see as the work of this barn raising and the barn raisings that Prometheus Radio has done? This is now your third one. What contribution do you see it making, these barn raisings, Prometheus Radio, to the community radio movement?
Well, locally, I saw people talking to each other here in this button factory that is the space where this radio WSCA is happening in Portsmouth, introducing themselves to each other. It's the first time they meet. I also saw young people and old people talking about DJing 101 training that they got, and these people would have never talked to each other crossing the street. So it has already provided a space for people to meet. It went on the air and brought sounds from the harbor downtown, and also sounds of the motorcycles, sounds of people talking about what's relevant in their new gallery, in their ice cream parlor, and a young girl having walked around with a mic asking people what's community radio for them. And then now a play, a very funny play, put together spontaneously, and people laughing of Portsmouth and laughing together from across the country and Canada. Having accomplished something, a community radio can bring this glue between elements that otherwise will float maybe to oblivion.
Mm-hmm. And worldwide, is there a contribution that community radio can make?
It's making, because we have Reporters Without Borders, Reporters Sin Fronteras, which is a which is a Latin American program that has happened, sprung off of the social forum in Brazil, whereby they are broadcasting simultaneously in two countries, three cities, and things like that. And these are new connections that people are making. You have also other programs that are being done simultaneously. And exactly what it says. People are able, through the radio and through different means, either through webcasting and relaying, or through ISDN and rebroadcasting, able to do things together from different geographic locations, truly cutting on this geographic distance and making it one world and uniting in a vision, in a dream, in capabilities and possibilities. And I think the promises are infinite if we don't give it up and we keep the fight, making sure that the airwaves are open, that the FCC retracts their hold back on low power FM, that more technology actually is given to the people versus to mega empowered forces, and the airwaves, which is free, stays free and open to the public, which we would remind the public that they can reclaim Earth, and they should, and they will.
Is there anything else that you want to add?
Remind people that joy and happiness and fun are what we strive for, and everything else that we do, like working and studying and constructing, should serve that. Sometimes we forget that and we end up being wage slaves. We end up being work machines.
Thank you very much, Reem.
The challenge that I see that could be an impediment to a growing and fruitful, you know, community media movement is, you know, the internal politics that happen within community stations. The fact that people are very hesitant about, you know, giving up power, which means like programmers shouldn't be, you know, shouldn't have a show for, you know, 10, 20 years, you know, and without, you know, having those shows without, you know, training people and having them eventually having to replace them. I think also, I mean, that's like an institutional issue in terms of not being able to, you know, share power and train people to be able to take those positions. I think also another challenge that I see is that people within community radio stations a lot of the times think that they are, you know, teaching the community instead of focusing on how they can educate the community, but also have the community educate them.
This particular station, whether it's radio or whether it's public access TV, and not only do they express their views and perhaps learn how to make media, but it's also community building for them, and it's a place that they feel that they belong, and they meet people through it. The community is built through this node of the station, and that's great. But often, in my experience, it seems to be a limited group of people that take advantage of that. So ideally, community media, I think, offers the opportunity for everyone, whether or not they participate directly or more passively from listening. But even if they're participating passively by listening, they get the message that you can do things yourself. You're empowered to make your own reportage, do your own reportage, make your own music, and you don't have to buy your music, your news, your entertainment, whatever it is. I mean, that to me personally, also, that's been one of the most important messages in community media, is that do-it-yourself aesthetic or ethic. What I was saying before, and what I believe that it is part of the process of bringing people together around this thing, whether it's a TV station or a radio station, where people are doing their own work, trying to build build connections with people and address issues of local concern. That aspect is almost more important than the medium itself. So that's how I take that. And the medium is—it's a technical thing, and then it's political as far as getting the access. But I'm not—I don't know the context for what.
Why is that access so important?
Why is that access so important? Well, we have the right to it in many cases. I mean, the airwaves—you know—who. Airwaves aren't owned by a couple people or to be doled out to a couple people. And the same goes for, you know, the public rights of way in the cities or whatever you lay cable across for internet or TV or data, whatever it is. So it's a right in many cases, and it's a way for democracy to be vital for people to actually participate in discussion, as opposed to always being passive receivers. Go do it, you know, whatever you're into. It's a way to find an outlet for it, and it's a way to meet other people who are into what you're doing, and to share what their interests are. It's a way to get to know your community. However you do it, get to know your community. You'll feel better about things.
This documentary is produced and distributed by Montreal Community Radio, CKUT 90.3 FM, online at www.ckut.ca. The Prometheus Radio Project can be found at prometheusradio.org.